Moncrief on News Talk.
When Donald Trump was first elected president, he withdrew the US from the Paris Accord on climate change. Joe Biden re-entered the agreement. So with the re-election of Donald Trump, a very real possibility, will he do it again? And what does that mean for the battle against climate change? The environmental journalist John Gibbons joins us now. Good afternoon, John.
Afternoon, Sean.
When he did it the first time, or when he, it took him a while to actually withdraw from it, but there was an argument abroad in the US that individual states are still going to aim for their targets, etc., etc., so he mightn't do that much damage in that sense. Do you think that was true? And is it still true?
Yeah, after Trump announced his withdrawal from Paris, I suppose the first thing is that the wheels of international climate diplomacy, they grind slowly. And it actually took him until almost the end of his term to actually withdraw the US. In fact, I think it was November 2020. So, of course, Joe Biden on his first day in office in January 2021 reversed that decision. So effectively, Trump's attempt to withdraw them from the accord failed. And you're right. I mean, for example, California, as the biggest, economically speaking, the biggest U.S. state, it announced that it was going its own way, separate to the Trump administration. So there are certain buffers. But I think the critical thing to understand here and to keep in mind is that, you know, climate action, first of all, the climate threat is a global threat, obviously, and climate action, by definition, has to happen at a global scale. And therefore, when the world's most powerful economy and arguably the thought leader, let's say, for the world opts out, well, then that's all bets are off. I mean, and it is important to say, Sean, that it's not like we're winning with America in, right? We're way behind already. We know, for example, we have these annual climate jamborees called the COP conferences. We have another one coming up shortly. Probably the only one that actually moved the needle on climate action was the Paris conference in 2015. We got the Paris Agreement arising from that, where all the countries of the earth put forward their proposals, their non-binding proposals on how to take action on climate change. None of us, Ireland included, have lived up to what we promised we would do 10 years ago. Not one single country on earth has met its Paris commitments. And yet that is the best. And I know you might say, well, at this stage, we'll just throw our hands in the air. But the reality is that, yes, we're failing, but we're failing slowly. What Trump is offering is to fail quickly. And in a situation like this, when failure is irreversible, then failing slowly, I will take it, Sean, over failing quickly. So essentially what we're, you know, the dump truck is approaching the cliff and Trump is trying to loosen the handbrake. That's really the best analogy I can give to explain the impact of Trump in a second term.
Yeah, and whether he withdraws from the Paris Agreement or just ignores it, it's probably his plans for the oil industry. And, you know, it's drill, baby, drill, as far as he's concerned.
That is correct. And I will say that supporting the oil industry has been a multilateral project in America. I remember Barack Obama, the great climate president of our time, boasting that more oil was pumped on his presidency than in any previous U.S. presidency. So, you see, we've got this complicated issue that they really talk about. Well, the Democrats, the Republicans, at least you know where you stand with them. Mm. Democrats talk out of both sides, Sean. They talk a good fight on climate action. And for example, Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, he smuggled through in that enormous bill. He smuggled through a lot of actually positive things on climate. But nowhere did Joe Biden or his predecessor, Barack Obama, say that they repudiate fossil fuels. And you might say, well, that's a strong position to take. But sadly, because of inaction over the last 20, 30 years, we're now in a situation where we have to basically decarbonize everything right across the world, and we've got to do it in double quick time. And there's no question, for example, that a Kamala Harris administration will break with that past either. They will continue. America, for example, had a whole renaissance in fossil energy when the technology around fracking was sort of stepped up, and basically America now pumps more fossil energy than it has at any time in its history. So this, you might say, well, on the one hand, the Democrats are constructive on climate action. Yes, they are. But America loves the revenues and the security of having easy, ready access to fossil energy. But of course, it's a double-edged sword, Sean, as you saw with a few weeks ago with Hurricane Helene that caused absolute catastrophic damage, tens of billions of dollars, one of many storms. Now, as we know, there have been storms before, but the difference now, we know this from the climate attribution studies that are been happening simultaneously, these storms are basically amped up. It's kind of weather on steroids that we're getting now. We've seen that obviously in Spain as well with utterly catastrophic flooding. And of course, if this were just happening in one or two places, you'd say, well, you know, that's weather for you. But in the last 2 to 3 weeks, we've had this in New Mexico, France, Italy, Spain, Saudi Arabia, Croatia, Oman, Malaysia, Morocco, Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, and Taiwan. That's off the top of my head. Serious flooding events with loss of life. And that's the real difference, Sean, with our new, shall we say, climate amped weather systems that we're getting hit right, left and centre. Here in Ireland, we've been lucky, and I mean lucky, that since Middleton last year, we haven't had a major weather catastrophe. But I'm sorry to say it's purely a matter not of if, but of when we get our next one. And of course, Ireland, our unique vulnerability in Ireland on the climate register is, of course, to flooding events. So sadly, let's just say if we get through this winter without a catastrophic flooding event, we'll have done extremely well.
Yeah. Now, and those weather events, and they do hit the United States very hard. And as you can say, that the Democrats do a nod to combating climate change and maybe have to smuggle things in other legislation, etc. Does Donald Trump and the Republican Party in general, do they just not believe in climate change? Is it as simple as that?
I mean, I could say, and they do look a little bit like a death cult. I mean, quite honestly, a lot of the behavior is similar to a kind of a Jonesville cult. Now, that would be probably naive. I think it's a little more sophisticated than that. We know, for example, that the Republican Party have long been in the pocket of the fossil fuel industry in the US. And the fossil fuel industry is a massive, this is a $1 trillion business. It's vast. And they have funded climate denial. They have bought politicians for decades on both sides of the aisle, Sean, but principally on the Republican side. So clearly, climate action represents an existential threat, obviously to us humans, but it also represents an existential threat to the energy business, because every time they say a windmill going up, every time they see a solar panel or a nuclear power station, what they're seeing is lost revenue. And these folks are quite prepared to burn the whole thing down in order to have another 5 years, another 10 years of record profits. And it is a strange thing. And like denial of basic science, it is a strange thing. Like, why would one deny? I mean, for example, no, we don't deny the science that allows our computer screens to convey the internet from remote places. The complex science that makes that happen, we don't even understand. Most of us haven't a clue how it happens. But we accept that when you flick on your computer, there's the internet. So there's many parts of science that we don't understand, but we don't query. We don't pretend the internet, for example, is a hoax. On the other hand, because climate science uniquely threatens a really powerful, really well-organized and well-funded interest group, well, they're fighting tooth and nail against it. And of course, on a smaller scale, we see the same thing here in Ireland, where while we don't have a big fossil fuel industry, we have a huge livestock sector who feel very threatened by talk about climate action. So of course, they will push alternate agendas, and they will also put pressure, political pressure, as we see here in Ireland, on our politicians to do as little as possible, to talk a great fight, but to make sure that they do as little as possible so that these particular financial interests are undisturbed. And that this is the so-called tragedy of the commons. It's happening all over the world, where these interests are more influential. They get closer to politicians than you or I. We only get to vote once every few years. But the actual lobbyists who have financial skin in the game, they're very, very close to our politicians. They're close to our policymakers. And these are the guys who are in the room. So when these documents that we discuss here in the media, you know, such and such a report or, you know, a new strategy for the industry is produced, when you look behind the curtain, what you find is industry operatives basically ghostwriting much of this. We've seen this in the US. We've actually seen it here in Ireland.
Yeah.
Many of our...
Well, I'm sorry to cut across here, John. I don't want to give the impression someone's telling me to get you off the air, but we actually have run a minute over time there. John, thanks a million as ever. That was the environmental journalist John Gibbons there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.